Welcome to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives, as we bring you some of our favourite conversations from 2021. Here's your host, Laura Turner.
Well, hello and welcome to another special edition of Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. I'm Laura Turner. Well, tonight's guest is one of my idols. She's simply an incredible interviewer. She's grilled some of the most cunning crooks and politicians of our time and helped Australians tell some of their most tragic and compelling stories. She's been in our lounge rooms via our televisions for 40 years. Her country roots helped her make it in an industry that was once a man's world. But if you ask me, she rules that roost now. It is my pleasure and absolute honour to welcome Liz Hayes to Great Australian Lives. How are you, Liz?
I'm very well. That was such a generous introduction. I have to say, perhaps I'm going to have trouble living up to all of that, but thank you.
We've seen you on all corners of the globe. And I first of all want to start with a funny one, and that is you in a particular corner of the globe sitting on a golden throne.
Yes, that would be with the King and Queen of Jordan you're talking about.
Love that story.
And purely by accident, I had no idea that they truly would have a golden throne, and they did. So that
Can
was a nice surprise.
Can you explain to the listener how it unfolded in terms of how you found that golden throne?
We were doing a story with them, a particularly nice couple, I might say, too, they are. Mm. We were in their home, which was a really obviously nice place, had a lovely view. But I do recall thinking it was really homely, which is nice. It wasn't a Buckingham Palace kind of place. I asked if I could go to the loo, bathroom, I'm sure I used the word, and they said, yes, over there, off to the left, wherever. And I went in there and it was blow me down, golden. And I heartily took my time, looked at that, and I thought, I'm not going to forget this. It was fantastic.
I love that. And we never will. I just love that story. Now, Liz, how has 2021 started for you? We've had, and, you know, it's obvious in saying, an extraordinary past 12 months and difficult too for an investigative reporter when we can't really go near people. A lot of 60 Minutes has been done, you know, we've seen laptops and computer screens, and it must have been a logistical nightmare for you.
I think it was a moment where we all sat on our backsides and thought, gosh, what are we going to do? Because we were so used to packing bags and running out the door. I mean, we just had not thought about doing that, you know, doing anything other than that. So it was a moment. But you know what? In glorious hindsight, a probably required moment, a nice moment, and I think everyone says this, where you were forced to sit and think and go, well, it's okay, and it was okay, and it is okay. We are getting through all of our storytelling regardless, like everybody else, like you, like everyone, and we're using technology, which is what I've really built my skills up now. But the important thing is to still be able to tell stories, and yes. We are still telling them. So that's we just had to rethink it. And I actually not having any trouble not getting on a plane. I'm quite okay about it.
You mentioned not having any trouble telling stories, and I think that's a really important thing in the world right now, that we are hamstrung a little, but there is this rise of Trumpism and this fake news thing that's thrown at us all the time. That really reinforces how important it is for us to tell these stories at the moment, doesn't it?
Oh, I think more than ever. The world is in crisis because of the virus, and that, when I say crisis, on a lot of fronts. It's economic, it's illness, but it's psychological, it's in every way. But we have had to find ways to still tell people what's going on in the world, what is important, and I think we still are doing that. And we're always going to have to battle conspiracy theories, fake news, whatever it is, but that's always been there. Maybe it's getting a megaphone at the minute because of the situation we're in, but I think we're still able to get out there and try and get to, you know, trusted credible sources and to tell stories. And that's vital, particularly now. That's vital. And we are doing it.
Do you find it particularly important at the moment to keep that trusting relationship with the viewer? In terms of, do you find it more important at the moment to make sure that that trust is still there, given that that megaphone is so loud at the moment?
Yes. I think it's really vital right now that we can, be a trusted source. And it doesn't stop us, and I did do a story on a conspiracy theorist with trying to, I guess, understand how this is happening. And it does come in a crisis quite often where when you can't make sense of something, that's where those people struggling with a situation will go with something that fits. And even telling that story was important for people to try and understand why there are so many people out there who are fearful, and what makes them then take the steps that they do. And that, I think, that is the root of the issue with conspiracy theories, is people are frightened. They don't like change hugely. And when they get frightened, they can't figure it out. Conspiracy theories can fill that void, and that can then swallow them up. It's important to understand why these things do happen. By the way, if you hear something, there's a cracking storm just about to happen out the side of my house here.
I was just about to explain that two cockatoos just went screeching past the window where I am at my mother's house. So I think we'll be even. Don't worry. Now, before we talk about your illustrious career, Liz, I'm very excited, and I'm sure others are too, about your new show, Under Investigation with Liz Hayes. Before we talk about those 40 years we've seen you on Channel 9, let's have a little listen to the promo for that show.
They're the mysteries that have baffled investigators and remained unsolved.
No one knew about their secret camping trips until they vanished.
In a new landmark event series, Liz Hayes brings together the crack team of criminal minds.
I'm looking for the truth.
These people have just vanished. Where are they?
From the producers of 60 Minutes, Under Investigation starts Monday, March 1 on 9.
Now, Liz, I love this because we often see stories on 60 Minutes or Current Affair or the news that might go unfinished. We might never hear, in terms of course, the story of Jaden Lesky and others that you investigate. We don't get answers. And this is another avenue, isn't it, to provide viewers and those really interested with that further investigation.
Look, it's a great way to explore further stories. I am on the edge of my seat, I should say, about this, because it is new. We are marrying our traditional storytelling with coming into the studio and being around a table with experts. So we are still, giving you the illustrations of our stories, but we're bringing everything still back into a studio with a table of people with expert interests. And the first show, one of them includes a local guy, a musterer, whose his expertise is, this is his back country, this is his backyard. He was sent on the search for this couple in our first episode. We try to bring as many interesting people with expertise in their fields to sit around and talk to each other and ask each other questions and go through information that we're feeding into the room. I would really love it if viewers at home are able to have those aha moment. Oh gosh, because I actually had a few of them. We do a lot of research and I think I know what's going to be said, but then I wasn't necessarily prepared, because I think it does take an energy on a life of its own. It does have its own energy. And so even those who came to the table talking amongst themselves came up with some, gosh, maybe this is what happened. And we did have moments like that. And that's in the first episode as well. And I think there's a genuine place for something like this, where you just watch people using their expertise and you join them, I hope, in hearing them, understanding them and exploring exploring a bit further what the subject is.
And that, of course, that first episode tomorrow night on Channel 9 is about the couple that went missing in the Victorian High Country. What other cases or mysteries are we looking at in this series?
Well, we have true crime, the couple from the High Country in Victoria. We have a Janine Bourne. She's a 31-year-old girl who went missing in the country town of Bathurst, which is a university town, and everybody might know about the Bathurst. What is it? 1,500? What is it now? Anyway, it's a racing car driver's extravaganza.
Yes. Let's just call it Bathurst.
let's call it Bathurst. But it's, and she's been missing now for many years. And this is a story that just won't go away. And it's deeply unsettling to a country town. Mm. And then there's Jaden Liske. By the way, with Janine Bourne, no one has ever been held accountable. Mm. With Jaden Liske, which many of your listeners will know about, that's Greg Domasevich, was put before the courts, charged with murder and even manslaughter, and found not guilty. Mm. So there's still this unresolved issue regarding this 13-month-old little boy who was found dead. And that's really interesting to look into what went on there. And it wasn't just the unresolved issue of a little boy. This whole town was eviscerated. It was judged. It was a time when the characters involved seemed not your norm, that I think many people expected. But if you come from country town, to be honest, it wasn't that unnormal.
Yes.
Or abnormal for me. I mean, it was intriguing to hear from everybody involved how everyone was impacted by this story, because if they weren't directly involved, if you lived in Moe, you felt like you were somehow rather scarred by this event. But we look into that, and we bring some really interesting thoughts to the table about that crime. And I guess we question whether the verdict was right or wrong.
Did you have willing participation from those at the heart of that story?
Oh, yes. Yes, very much. And good. Interesting that even all these years later, all the vested interests still hang on to this case. And this case means a lot, particularly, obviously, to Greg Domasevich and Belinda Murphy, who was the mother of Jaden. These are people who are affected for life because of what occurred, the loss of this little boy. The man in charge of the police investigation, the prosecution, obviously, believing it had a pretty good case. We look at it all, and I think it's just interesting to know what went on behind the scenes.
Absolutely. And that is on Under Investigation with Liz Hayes. Well, I'm Laura Turner, and you're listening to this, and you're listening to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. And for more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au. And more with journalist and television presenter Liz Hayes in just a moment.
You're listening to the best of Great Australian Lives for 2021. Wishing you a safe and happy Christmas and New Year from Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
This is a story I don't want to have to tell, and in modern Australia, I shouldn't need to tell. It's about decent people in the country who are dying because of a rural health system that's letting them down. They're people like my precious dad.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is journalist and television presenter Liz Hayes, and we just heard the beginning of her story on 60 Minutes, reporting on the death of her own father. Liz, I don't know that there would be a story more difficult to report on than that of your own loved one, someone so close to you. But I remember that story well, and I remember you saying, even in his dying moments, that you had that instinct inside you, I need to talk about this. Do you still feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. That was the worst story I've ever had to tell, but right then it was the most important story I had to tell. And I felt deeply about what had occurred to him, knowing that, and to later find out, that there were many others who had experienced the horror that I had. And I mean that in the rural regions of Australia, rural, remote, regional areas of Australia, our health system is still letting down our citizens. Distance is a disadvantage. It's just simply not fair. I still can't believe that we are allowing it to happen. And when I say we, all of us in Australia, the governments, bureaucrats, all those people who could make a difference to change things haven't. And so in my father's case, just to recap, he hadn't received, he'd been to hospital for pneumonia, he'd been treated successfully for this pneumonia, but the hospital he was in failed to give him his medication that was required for a heart condition that was a stroke prevention medication. It was essential to his condition, and they simply didn't give it to him for the 10 days. And the reason they didn't give it to him was because they forgot to write it down. I on the surface, it's just unforgivable. You think to yourself, well, how does that happen? But then I had to look into that, because nobody does this deliberately. Nobody wants to cause this kind of harm. I didn't want to, you know, have a public flogging of the person who failed to do their job, but I want to understand what had happened. And when I found out, it just got worse. I mean, this was a doctor, a sole doctor, in charge of a hospital of 79-odd beds. And this was not uncommon. This is what happens around rural Australia, I find. There are hospitals without a doctor. And so, you know, things like this can happen and do happen all the time. Anyway, I know I bang on about it, but it's so heartbreaking and unforgivable that we as a nation can let that sort of basic stuff happen. And it happens because there are not enough people, there are not enough resources, and there's not enough care. People just don't care enough.
And I'm sure it would add insult to injury for you, Liz, at the beginning of that investigation, it happened to you. And then as you looked further into it, to see that it happened to so many other people. I remember being a young reporter in country television in country Victoria and reporting on, you know, the bed shortages and the ambulance ramping and the, you know, all of those issues with doctor shortages and that sort of thing. What answers did you come across in terms of why regional Victoria and rural Australians are so disadvantaged when it comes to healthcare? I mean, you said it's a lack of resources and we don't care enough. Is there more than that?
Well, first of all, people in these rural and regional districts, remote areas, you know what? They're so stoic and they don't really want to complain. They also have a view that nobody listens to them. Nobody, what can they do? They feel very singular. They're reluctant to speak up because they don't want to be negative, because they know they've got to go back to that same place.
That town, for them. Yes.
Yeah, and they worry that it's going to come back at them. And I know for a fact that the town of Cobar, for example, was very, very angry with my fellow journalist, Jamel Wells, who I featured in my story, who also lost her dad. They were angry, or certain elements, I should say, of the town were angry with her for raising it, because they felt like she was bringing shame to the town. And I think that's part of the problem, is it's like, no, we're not. What we're trying to do is say, you deserve better. You are better than this. You shouldn't have to be like this. But it is one of those areas where we need citizens of these places to feel empowered, to speak up and say, that's not fair. We shouldn't have to live like this. And we do need to just address getting people out into rural areas. They do not expect to get open heart surgery in the little town or wherever, but they do expect that there's a competent health service that can get them into a safe place to get them to where they need to go.
Absolutely.
And I think that you know what? I hate to say it, but I still think politics plays a big role. And when your local member feels the heat, then they might pass that heat on. And that's probably how it's going to change.
Absolutely, and it's got all sorts of things to do with where funding goes and who's in what seat and, you know, who has the loudest voices. Your dad, Brian Ryan, I know, I mean, you can see it in your eyes how much you adored him. Tell the listeners about your dad, Brian.
Well, I think what was so magical about my dad was he was everybody's dad. I mean, he was this country town man. He always stood tall and straight. He was country to the core in that he believed in everyone having a fair go. He believed in justice and the little man also being allowed to be heard. He was, you know, five kids, great mum, fabulous wife. He just was happy with his lot in life because his delight came from being able to just have a happy life, to be deadly honest, and that was having happy kids, happy wife, having friends. Everybody, you know, liked him. He was just, you know, a good solid man, if you like, and he was the rock. He was the rock, yeah, of our family.
Those qualities, Liz, you said, his sense of justice, standing up for the little man, those are things that many reporters, journalists have. Do you think that's where you got it from Dad?
I've definitely got a bit of that. Yes, without doubt, I have a bit of the social justice conscience that comes from both my mum and dad. And I think that's because they were farmers and working class people, really. They understood the importance of coming together for others and helping others. And my family were the ones who gave $5, $10 to just about every charity going because you should and they wanted to. Mm. They're those, mm, you know, they, like so many of these charities, they rely on these, you know, good-hearted people to give what they probably can't afford, but they think someone else needs it more than you do. And that's, you know, that's where I saw that. I was raised with that. I get it. Mm. And, you know, it's a strange thing because even though I feel very privileged and I'm very happy with my lot in life, I almost feel guilty that my lot is a little bit more of a lot than others. You know, I feel like I've done very well and I wish everybody could have that. And I do carry a sense of, not guilt, but a little discomfort that I might have more than others.
Liz, I touched in the intro about how you, your roots, your country roots helped you in an industry, which was television in the early days, which was very much made up of men. But what I didn't mention is that you come from a family of a number of brothers. I have read profiles on you in the past where you talk about that really helped you stand up in the industry, didn't it? And your mum too, it was you and her against the boys.
Oh, yeah, no. My mum was fantastic. She was way ahead of her time. She was that woman who said, you don't have to, you know, do what you think women have to do, because she didn't think she should have to either, although she probably did obey the rules more so because the ramifications were far greater in her day. But, yes, I was raised with four brothers, all of whom are fantastic, but I found out very quickly how to navigate my way through a very male world, and with my mum's guidance as well. I think that has kept me in good stead somehow.
What I think is incredible, Liz, is that you signed to the Nine Network, a place where you still are, in 1981, and you're co-host of Today with Steve Liebman in 1986. It seems like so long ago, especially for our listeners who would remember those days. But you would remember them like they're yesterday, wouldn't you? I mean, breakfast TV or early morning television certainly stays with you, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've got to say. Well, you know what? That was, I I've never felt like I've actually worked a day in my life, and I think that's a blessing because I really love what I do. Trust me, there are days when I do think, gosh, I'm could do it to sleep right now. But but ultimately, I don't feel like I haven't disliked what I've done as a living. When I was made the Today Show co-host with Steve Liebman, I had no idea how horrific those early mornings were. I mean, on the farm, by the way, I was the one who always had to get up first to go and get those cows in, which really irritated me because it was like freezing quite often in winter, obviously. And that meant I was up as a kid at round about, you know, six.
But that's morning TV.
But little did I know, three was probably going to be my wake-up call. When I would get a call, actually Channel 9 reception would ring me to wake me up. Really? And I'd get the call and I'd go, hello. And they'd say, oh, hi, Liz, it's your wake-up call.
Get up.
Yes, okay. And I wouldn't open my eyes until I literally stood in the shower and turned the water on because it was then like, oh, here I go. But then I was fine. Strange. Yes. I mean,
once you're up, you're up. Was that young Liz bringing the cows in Taree and on the coast in New South Wales all those years ago, did she ever foresee herself, you know, at the forefront of, you know, a show like 60 Minutes? Was that the goal?
Oh, God, no. We didn't even get a TV until, you know, I was a kid, and even then Dad won because he was a champion sailor, won these TVs. He won two, in fact, and he gave one away, of course. But I recall sitting watching this TV, and all we had was a test pattern for weeks and weeks because television hadn't really arrived in our little corner of the world. I not in a million years did I ever think that I would be where I am.
Yeah. Well, we are so lucky to have you consistently on Channel 9 too. I mean, you see so much movement around what is a very small industry, and you've stayed where you are. You're fiercely loyal. Channel 9's obviously been good to you too.
I am fiercely loyal. That's, a trait of my mum and dad as well. But I am fiercely loyal. I'm not stupid though. And if I felt that it wasn't a good thing to do, I wouldn't be there. It has been a very good relationship. I think I'm a bit blessed also because I am a little renowned for speaking up and, I proffer my own case. I put forward my own thoughts, and over the years, obviously, and I'm, you know, I'll be 65 this year, so I'm very capable of speaking up for myself, and I do, and that's been a good thing. But I'm very respectful of all parties, and I don't ever forget that I'm a part of a team. I'm no bigger and better than anyone else. And to be honest, those around me are all important to what I do, and they're very much a part of my success.
Absolutely. It is absolutely teamwork in television. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives, and Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with reporter, journalist and television presenter Liz Hayes when we return.
Welcome back to the best of Great Australian Lives, thanks to Tobin Brothers Funerals, celebrating lives.
One story that's never left me is the story of Claire Oliver, a young girl who had developed a melanoma from sunbeds.
I think I choose life. I choose to be fair. I choose to live my life and walk, you know, to that garden, and to travel the world and not, you know, die at the age of 26 because I don't want to.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives. For Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives, I'm Laura Turner. Our guest tonight is Liz Hayes, legendary Australian reporter and journalist, and we heard part of Liz's report for 60 Minutes there on the tragic story of Claire Oliver, who died from skin cancer at just 26 years old, believing it was caused by years of solarium use, despite being assured they were completely safe. Liz, I have seen you interviewed about that particular story. And for someone who has would have lost track of the amount of people you've interviewed and done stories on over the years, that one particularly sticks with you, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. It has a habit of bringing me undone. And I think it's because I've never been very good at disengaging. And it's one of the things I like, but it's also one of the things that comes back and gets me. And it is these moments that you have when you're a reporter and you meet people and it just stays with you. But I think what it was for me was that I was at her deathbed and literally talking to her in her hospital bed, and I just looked at her and thought that you at 26, this should never happen. This should not happen. Mm. And I just was overwhelmed by the no, that was wrong. I just knew that I couldn't leave that hospital without saying, you just can't. You can't let that continue to be the case. Mm. It's just every young person deserves a safety barrier. And and I know it's hard, and I know that people love a tan and all that sort of stuff, but that will stay with me, I must say.
Yeah. I guess the bittersweet side of that is the position that you're in, that you're able to help and get that story out there and change legislation, and that's what happened.
I guess. I mean, well, that's the holy grail, isn't it, that you're not just telling a story and shining a light, but something does come of it, and maybe that's not what you're intending, but when you set out, if it means that you can make a difference, it makes everything worthwhile. And I found it even with my dad's story in New South Wales. We now have a parliamentary inquiry into rural health that's taking place. And I feel proud that Jamel Wells from the ABC and I got that. And I must say, Carrie Fellner from the Sydney Morning Herald as well, we just kept at it. And it's the same with the sunbed story. It is that moment where I think everybody goes, that's an unnecessary death. And Claire Oliver should never have been that girl, you know, who died. Very shortly after that interview, I felt so sad, and I felt it was so wrong.
Yeah. Hate to make it about me. I changed a law in my sister's, late sister's honour. So I feel and know that feeling of utter sadness, but I guess hope for others. And I think journalists cop it for being annoying and loud and making people uncomfortable, but it's a craft that's so necessary a lot of the time, isn't it?
Oh, I think journalism is about informing people, but it is also about calling people to account. And systems and democracies, everything rests on transparency, openness, information. And for you to do what you did for your sister is just as important as what I might have done. But ultimately, journalism at its best does call to account those things that should be investigated and looked at, and if necessary, changed. And that's the good bit about our job, that we can maybe make a difference.
Absolutely. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals Celebrating Lives. Tobin Brothers offer a range of very practical solutions to help you plan a funeral and pay tribute to your loved one. For more information, visit tobinbrothers.com.au, and more with reporter, journalist and television presenter Liz Hayes when we return.
You're listening to the best of Great Australian Lives for 2021, wishing you a safe and happy Christmas and New Year from Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.
Welcome back to Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. Our guest tonight is a hero of mine, journalist and reporter Liz Hayes, whose new show Under Investigation with Liz Hayes premieres tomorrow night on Channel 9 at 9 p.m. Now, Liz, we've heard all about your incredible career, but what next? What do you plan for 2021?
Oh, gosh, you can ask and I'd like to get some answers as well. But no, I think this show Under Investigation has kept us, well, kept me, and I should mention my producer, Gareth Harvey. It's really the two of us, and we have a couple of brilliant producers with us, but really it's a small team, and so that's kept us really, really busy. But I am a Monday heading out on some 60-minute stories, so, you know, I'm flying to Queensland, go figure.
Woo! Getting back on an aeroplane.
I know. How exciting is that?
It's hardly the LA long haul, is it?
No, not quite. But look, you know what? I'm grateful. I'm grateful we can go somewhere in Australia.
Absolutely, yeah. Do you get back to Taree much?
Yes. I still have family there and we still have the family home. So, yeah, it's that peaceful place in my heart that still resonates, and I like to get back there. I do.
And for the listener who has followed your career, and maybe a little bit for me, what does Liz Hayes like to do in her downtime when you're not investigating, you know, these incredible stories and getting on aeroplanes?
Where do I begin? Look, I can be a binge television watcher. You know, I have learned
really?
The art of sitting and watching, you know, streaming some of those great Netflix
yep.
things. Oh, I should say the word Stan probably, but anyway,
yes.
anything that... I like reading books. I love reading books, but I just don't get to read them as often as I want. So I have this big pile by my bed, which I collect, and it come, you know, the end
it's
of the year, I try
it's
to get through them.
Covered in dust.
Yeah, exactly. I try to do a bit of exercise on a regular basis. Now I'm famous for my hula hoop. That's embarrassing,
really?
But it's true. Well, I found that was a handy thing to keep me fit in front of the telly.
Wow. Around the neck and arms and ankles or just the waist?
Oh, no. I'm no. The fat part of me would be around the waist. So,
do you know, Liz, I used to do the hula hoop as a little kid, and I have found, because my kids have one, I have found I can't do it anymore. I can do it around my arms,
yes,
my
can.
Legs, my neck, but my waist. I can't
you
do
can.
It anymore.
You
How?
Can do it. And there's a trick. The bigger the hoop, the easier it is.
Ah, well, theirs is quite small, so that might be it. There you go.
That's it.
I'm going to do it. You've got me hooked. Because I think it would give you quite a nice hourglass shape, all that hoolering.
Yeah. Look, I get very peculiar looks, trust me.
I absolutely love that. And I've loved our chat tonight. Thank you, Liz. It has been an honour and a pleasure having you on Great Australian Lives.
Laura, it's been my pleasure. Thank you so much.
If you've enjoyed our chat with Liz Hayes tonight and you'd like to share it with a friend, subscribe to the Great Australian Lives podcast. This is Great Australian Lives for Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives. And, of course, join me the same time next week when we celebrate another Great Australian Life.
Thanks for listening to the best of Great Australian Lives for 2021. Wishing you a safe and happy Christmas and New Year from Tobin Brothers Funerals, Celebrating Lives.